third for setting a screen.
He's such a physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dead battle box. Get it right there.
Pizzo's dying for a moving screen.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's another edition of the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn with The Athletic. I'm here with Dylan Burkhart of UMHoops.com. It is February 11th, 2019. Dylan, how are you, pal?
Good. Thanks to everyone who enjoyed the midweek pod. We got a lot of positive feedback on that. I was a little surprised.
How about that? Why would you be surprised by that?
I just didn't think it would make that much of a difference in people's week, but apparently the people really enjoyed it.
This is our time, man. We have like an 8-week window of absolute relevance of college basketball.
And Super Bowl is over, and we're ready to rock.
We got to strike while the iron's hot. How you doing over there? You got your coffee ready?
Got my coffee. Ready to get into it.
What's your home situation? Are you a pour over guy? Are you a pot guy?
Oh, I have an automatic espresso maker, so it like grinds it up and it makes, so it's like a Americano.
You big time. See, because you go red eyes all day.
Just straight espresso all day.
Wait, you just do a cup of espresso?
Yeah, like an Americano.
Oof.
Throw me under the bus. Yeah, you need to survive out here,
some
man.
Some jet fuel. All right. Well, listen, everyone. Yeah, again, thanks for listening to the midweek pod, and we'll probably do another one this week, right?
That's the plan.
Okay. And we'll have kind of a different arrangement for those guys. I try to do different things. But make sure you subscribe to umhoops.com. Check out Dylan's analysis and videos and, of course, those lovely, lovely charts. And then check out theathletic.com for all of our college basketball coverage, including that of yours truly. We'll have a story today. What's it? Right now it's 9 a.m. on Monday. The story's not up yet. It should be up by the time this is up. But hung out with Beeline's first team a little bit over the weekend. At halftime and a little bit pregame for the Wisconsin game. For all the stories of Beeline's past that I've done, I've actually hung out with or met multiple guys from his first teams from the JV squad at Newfane High School, and got to know those guys, and they shared some stories, and there was some very interesting nuggets that say a lot about who he is as a coach today. You want a quick one, Dylan?
Let's hear it.
So his big thing was taking charges back in the day. All right? So they would work on taking charges all day, all practice. It was their big thing. Like, you were required to stand and cheer if someone drew a charge. And before games, he would go up to the officials and say, listen, this is what an offensive charge is, and would literally act out. You know, you plant your feet, you square your body, your position is set, and if you take the contact, that is a charge. This is how we teach it. This is what it is within the rules of bat. So he would lecture. Now, John Beeline at this time is 22 years old. He would lecture the officials on what a charge is. So now, of course, they are looking for it. And then his team would just rattle them off, just one after another, charge, charge, charge. He had one dude in one season of JV basketball draw 37 charges.
That's impressive. That's a great it's a great lead into Wisconsin too. I like how you played that.
That's right. Well, it reminds me now of the travel, right? John Beeline explaining to everyone, this is what
modern day charge.
This is how we teach what is and what is not traveling and pivoting and blah blah blah. And so I got a kick out of that. But there's a lot more of that kind of stuff in the story. It'll be up today at some point. Unless the editor spikes it, which, hey, you never know. Maybe it's really bad. So, all right, on to Michigan, Wisconsin. Big win for those Wolverines. Much needed. Little revenge action. I don't really care about the revenge tour. I think it's much more important in terms of the Big Ten standings. And this one put Michigan back atop of things. And for now, a half game up on Purdue. Your big takeaways that you broke down on UM Hoops?
The first thing was really that it was just a mirror image of the game in Madison. It was Wisconsin kind of got out to a hot start, but then Michigan had the lead and just could never pull away and finally kind of broke the dam or whatnot to break through at the very end of the game. And it was really, I don't think they led by more than two possessions the entire second half. And then they finally got through there, and then it was just kind of over, and Wisconsin just kind of went home. It was the exact same kind of game, brutal, slow-paced, take your time, grind up possessions, and it was basically probably about what we expected. We talked about it last week. Came down to Michigan missing a bunch of wide-open threes, but Charles Matthews making a bunch of really tough twos, not really what you'd expect. And if you're Wisconsin, you're probably sitting back screaming how we'd lose to that shot. But you also probably didn't expect Michigan to miss every single three-pointer it shot on at home. So I don't know. What was your big kind of takeaway?
I don't know. I want to start with Matthews because I feel like we talked about it before where people, you know, when he is putting up poor shooting numbers and, you know, people can pick his game apart, including us. But we've talked about it on the pod where it's like, look, there are some games where he makes all of those short range shots, and maybe his decisions are a little bit quicker and right, or maybe his reads on the defense are a little bit better. But like, this is kind of the player he is, and it's tough to make a lot of the shots that he makes. But once he gets going and he looks like a pro, he looks like the guy from the 2018 NCAA tournament. It can be just an enormous difference, and it's like the thing is like, how do you plan for that? You know, if you're A, the opponent, and if you're B, Michigan. It's kind of it's the great mystery of Charles Matthews because he was just tremendous in this game.
His shots are unguardable. They just don't always go in.
Right.
I mean, they're defense agnostic, right? Like, he can get that mid-range two basically whenever he wants, but he also didn't make – he missed – like, I think – what do I have the stats here somewhere? Let me find them. He missed 20 mid-range jumpers in a row.
Wow.
Over five games leading, like, from New Year's to into the Big Ten in January. So he obviously is not going to miss – he's not going to go over 20 ever again.
Right.
It's probably, what, a 40% shot. So eventually you're going to have games like yesterday where he shoots a little better than that just because it's the law of averages in many ways. But what's interesting to me is that he really has struggled over the last few games, not necessarily with the mid-range shot. He hadn't really even been taking that many. He was also struggling to finish at the basket. And I think he got a couple shots to go around the rim, and that kind of built his confidence. I also think it that Brevin Pritzel couldn't really guard him, and that sort of got him going and probably be the underrated element of that. Not many times you're going to see Brevin Pritzel guarding Charles Matthews,
right.
I don't think.
Right. And for a guy who was taking difficult shots, like, he still really I wouldn't say he was forcing things. You know, he only had one turnover in 36 minutes against, you know, a pretty tough defensive team. Obviously, Wisconsin isn't big on producing turnovers, but you get my point. You know, he was relatively under control for a guy who had the ball in his hands a lot in the second half.
Yeah, they went, and he didn't really do much of anything in the first half. He had a really quiet first half, and then I think they kind of realized that the side ball screen was there and he could attack. Right. And it's interesting because most of the times that he's been successful out of that side ball screen, it's been rejecting the screen, going baseline and dunking on someone. This was all middle drive, using the screen, getting into the paint and finishing, which hasn't really been his MO. And if you look at his synergy profile, he's like 100th percentile rejecting a screen on a side ball screen, and then 20th percentile when he tries to use a screen. So it's a good step in the right direction for him. It's just tough to say how sustainable it is.
Exactly.
I mean, he had great moments at Rutgers too. He had like in the second half of that Rutgers game, he had 6-7 possessions in a row where it was kind of the same thing. He just dominated. It's just there's another 55 possessions in every game, and you don't know what you're going to get from him.
Right, and yeah, you wonder, okay, is this the start of some kind of senior thing? You know, we've seen this a bunch of times with guys who just really finished their. I'm going to go ahead and call this Charles Matthews senior season. That's probably fair, right?
I would certainly say so.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe this is the start of something. We'll see. But you're right. I just don't know how replicable it is. But I think you bring up an interesting point with the side ball screen stuff, and it's that while they've been, you know, I wonder as they've been searching for things offensively or what guy can do what on what night, you know, how much of it just needs to go back to being, and I obviously John Beilein tries to do this every game, but, you know, just finding the things that work in the individual matchup and then everyone kind of accepting that this is what it's going to be, right? And that means maybe Jordan Poole taking, you know, not taking that jack three and just staying within the system and being like, okay, this thing is the thing that we are focusing on. Get the ball there, right? A little bit less freelancing from a guy like Poole, a guy like Brazdeikis, even a guy like Matthews when things aren't going his way, right? Just focusing on what the plan is and what can be executed against the matchup that's presented.
Yeah, I wonder, like, this team is not young, really, but a lot of the guys we're talking about, Poole, Brazdeikis, Matthews, are not, like, I think you probably have to go into a game with a bit of a plan to get some of those guys involved, right? Like, if you're going to plan on attacking with Poole out of ball screens, it's probably something you're going to rep in practice a bit more.
Right.
I think so. There's some of it that probably is focused a little bit before the game. I don't know how dynamic they it's not like, I don't know if it's the most mature offensive team in that respect, right? Like, I don't know. Then I really think with Matthews, it comes down to just making shots and not, and that's just changed everything for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it was, I mean, I know Beilein said after the game, it was something they saw that was really working, but I think that's just more who was guarding him than really anything Wisconsin did. And that's tough to, I guess, project that Davison's going to get in foul trouble. And I think that kind of opened things up for him a little bit there when he did.
Yeah. And speaking of opening things up, I think this game was also perfect example, A, of obviously just the importance of John Teske staying on the floor and just doing what he does. He is an all-conference center right now, which is incredible, but that is the case. And Isaiah Livers giving you something off the bench. You know, he made some key shots in this game when they needed them. And, like, when you don't have a bench, you got to get something from the guy that is your bench. And he produced today. I mean, John played basically a six-man rotation. Livers got 16 minutes and gave him 9 points. And if you can get that from him, it makes worlds of difference, especially in a game like this that was low possession, low scoring.
Yeah, I have a hard time figuring out what to make out of Isaiah. He can shoot it. He has moments where he shoots it well, but I'm not sure you'd call him a shooter. You're not going to go and draw up, like, dead ball sets to get him jump shots necessarily. At times, he looks great on defense, but the Isaiah Livers as a five defensive unit doesn't really work that well defensively. As, like, early in the season, we thought it really looked like something that might be versatile and effective, but really, I think he's best defensively as a four, and he gives them a more rim protection and stuff like that when Brazdeikis is off the floor. And he actually had some big moments late in the game when Brazdeikis got pulled out because he kept ball watching and left a open three. So Livers gives them that, but I still, you don't know if you're going to say Livers is going to have to play 25 minutes at center. I still think that might be a long game for Michigan. So I'm curious, like, what do you see? He's not creating his own offense, but he can hit open shots. He had a really good take on a bad closeout, and he finished at the rim, which is like his next kind of step.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, you know, like, just, there's no reason that he shouldn't do that at least a couple times a game, or at least try it, because he, you know, he's given that angle a lot, and there's sometimes he either just passes it, or he'll just force a shot either from the perimeter or, like, take two dribbles, pull up, when you're just like, dude, just go, you know, go to the rim somehow, force the contact. He's a 78% free throw shooter, but he's only taken 27 free throws.
I'd say he's about a 1.5 dribble max.
One and a half, there you go. Fair.
So that's sort of when he starts dribbling the ball in transition, it gets dicey.
Yep.
So it's just kind of figuring out, I guess, what you're going to get from that spot. And that, I think there's a ton of potential there. It's just a little bit untapped at this point.
Yeah, I mean, him at the five, you're right. I think early on we thought it was going to be something that Michigan was going to be able to do to teams and put other teams in bad spots, and it really hasn't panned out that way. Now it's really based on what matchups Michigan sees. If they're in a position where the other team plays an undersized five, okay, you can steal some minutes with Livers there. And that's a great luxury to have, especially when Teske's playing, you know, 35 minutes a night at this point. So for him, though, that corner three is money. He's made eight. He's made a three in Michigan's last eight games. I think he has been working his way back a little bit from that little back tweak that he had. That's not something that I think you're suddenly, you know, snap a finger and you're 100%. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those you're just kind of expecting it to happen that, you know, suddenly he can put the ball on the deck or suddenly he can do something a little bit different. But he is kind of very much a similar player to what he was last year. But
it's the shooting. All you need this year is just, can you come in and make two out of your four 3-point shots in a game? And that will change games for Michigan.
Fully capable of doing that. Shooting 43% for the season. Those numbers are down a little bit in league play, but of late, he's been pretty good. He had a couple mm-hmm. 1-for-4 performances, but most games he's pretty decent. And getting better, I think. I think he's getting confidence in that shot as we speak. And, you know, maybe he's due for a 3-for-4 game that could really get him going. And that really changes the look. It's a different scout when he's doing that.
Yeah, if he makes 2 or 3 threes in a game, it completely changes the game for Michigan, I'd say. You come in off the bench and you can get him a few shots and that changes things. I think we should probably hit on the Teskey Hat matchup because that was the focal point of the game. Last week we said that they would probably play him single coverage, which they did. I really appreciated Steve Lavin suggesting that Michigan might go zone.
Wait, that actually happened? I saw your tweet.
Yeah.
Did he said that?
Yep. He said that they were appalled that they were playing single coverage on Hap. They would have to probably make some adjustments. Mind you, they were scoring 0.87 points per possession in the first half, and that maybe John Beilein would try to bust out a zone in the second half to contain Hap. That's what happened.
I can't believe Steve Lapis hasn't coached in 10 years.
I'll
put it that way. Oh, wait, did you say Lapis or Lavin?
Lavin.
Lavin. Okay, well, I know Lapis, and that's okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. But, yeah, maybe maybe that explains a lot about Lavin's job status.
So
that's awesome. Good.
So Hap and Teskey. Hap got off to the great start. I thought that was similar to Rutgers in a lot of ways, where you're not going to ever pull away from Michigan if you're just getting 2 points on 6 out of 10. Even a good game for Hap, he's not going to shoot 20 of 20 on twos. So I liked the strategy. And then Teskey really kind of settled into the game and shut him down in the second half, which I didn't expect. The foul trouble played a big element, but I think we should also hit on Teskey's offense. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do anything complicated. Basically, everything he does is just diving to the hoop or popping out for a three. But right now, he is one of the best ball screen scorers in the country in terms of how much points he creates rolling to the basket or popping off of a ball screen. He's scoring more points per game than Mo Wagner did in that regard. And there's only two players in the country who have more possessions per game doing that than him. And he's way more efficient than both. So he's really created kind of this extra dimension of Michigan's offense where they can just lob the ball up to the rim and he puts it in. And that really creates some of that, I guess, space, I would say, that Michigan loses from not having shooters. Right, so it's like an extra threat that they haven't always had, because you couldn't really, like, Mo is a great threat to pop, but he couldn't go catch the ball above the rim and throw it down like Teskey. He just didn't have that size, and I think that's a really interesting dynamic and it really opens up everything Xavier Simpson does as well.
And Teskey gets offensive tips and putbacks mm-hmm. that Mo never got. He's much more apt at getting a hand on the ball. With it coming off the rim, mainly because he's a tank, you know, and he's got these tree trunk legs. He's got such a solid base that he's really hard to move. So if he gets position on a jump shot, he's at least getting a hand on it for a tip out or a tip in, like a lot of the time. And it's huge for a team that doesn't get a lot of extra possessions. You know, he gets those tip outs, and he gets a couple second chance points that, they really, at least since I've been around here, that they have not gotten.
Yeah, since Mitch probably. I don't know anyone mm-hmm. that's been as good on the offensive glass. I think it's the 71% of his offense comes either rolling or popping out of a ball screen, just a simple cut to the rim or a putback. So that's basically everything he does. So I see a lot of people say that he would be a perfect center in the NBA like 20 years ago or whatever, I would actually say he's a better fit for the modern basketball game with his ability to shoot threes, to just be a rim runner. Like, he's not a post-up guy. Like, that's who I think of as a old era player. So I find that fascinating. Like, he's a guy who you can switch onto a ball screen. Like, he actually fits, I think, the modern game a lot better than the he's not an old school big man to me, even though everyone says that just because he's 7 foot tall, I guess.
And you know what's interesting also about Teske is, you know, a lot of bigs, just because of the nature of, you know, your skill set, can be not prone to turnovers, but, you know, sometimes liability with the ball in their hand, or they'll have turnovers here or there, or they'll have some wasted possessions, but he doesn't make mistakes with the ball.
I agree with that, and I know he's like leading the country in turnover rate or something like that.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, but he also is probably leading the country in fewest seconds per touch, right? Like,
He's not putting the ball through his legs, but he does occasionally, you know, have to pass the ball.
He has some great moments at Illinois where he passed the ball when he shorted the ball screen and he kind of caught it at the free throw line and would find guys cutting backdoor. That was impressive, but that's just.
But on those rolls, you know, he doesn't catch it and put it off his knee. He doesn't.
No, he catches it and puts it.
He doesn't drop the ball. He doesn't throw it away. It's for a guy. What is he? I mean, how many minutes a game is he playing at this point? Let's just look at league play, conference game. He's playing 30 minutes a game in league play, and has committed 4 turnovers. That's unbelievable. I'm just saying, I'm just giving the guy a compliment.
I agree. It's just a stat that is based off of his role, in my opinion.
All right. Okay. I'm not arguing with you, but I'm just saying it's a luxury to have a guy who doesn't make mistakes. Because on that roll action that he does, there's been plenty of guys who catch it and don't just put it in the basket.
That's true. He does a great job of that.
They do try to do something extra. Mo would try to turn it into some spin move, flip layup, and put it off his knee. Out of bounds.
That's because Mo couldn't go catch it above the rim and put it in.
Or Jordan Morgan would do God knows what. You know, like, it's just... It's just a real luxury to have. So
all I'm saying is most bigs have a higher turnover rate because they're catching the ball in the block and trying
back
to do something.
Their basket. Sure.
If Michigan was throwing it into Teske in the post 6 times a game, he'd have a higher turnover rate too.
Okay. Well, then, all right. Teske's turnover stats are a fraud.
No, they're symbolic of his role.
I'm throwing shade. Jesus. Oh. All right, let's touch on Rutgers before we hop over to Michigan State, because this is damn near going to be the Wisconsin podcast because of how much we're going to talk about them with Michigan State about to play them tomorrow night. So,
You keep thinking they're playing Rutgers, man. You're caught in last week.
They're interchangeable, man. Whatever. But not so much anymore. Rutgers is actually a team. So
hold on. You know who won a game last week? It wasn't Rutgers.
I know you're very proud
of it. It was Penn State.
Yeah.
So let's give them a little credit.
And the hug heard round world after that one, too. But we'll get into that in a little bit. All right. Michigan, Penn State, weird place to play. No one wants to go there. Penn State is coming off a pretty feisty effort there at Ohio State that definitely had the Buckeyes squirming a little bit last Thursday night. It's a bad team with some talent is pretty much how to describe Penn State. They've lost a million close games.
Yeah, listen to their last. So they have lost by 1 at Minnesota, lost by 4 at home to Rutgers, lost in overtime at home to Purdue, 1 at Northwestern, lost by 4 at Ohio State in a game that was all those games were right there. So they're tough.
Yep. And their previous matchup was here. Michigan won by 13 in a rock fight. It was a pretty ugly game, if I remember. Is that right? But that's what, you know, that's what Penn State does. They want you to play ugly, and then they want to kind of bully their way to a win, if at all possible. I have not kept up overly with what's been going on with the boys in Happy Valley. But
here's the scary thing with Penn State is that They are what they are. They're 1-11 in the league. But in Big Ten games, they're shooting 28% on threes, and their opponents are shooting 41% on threes. Those are both worse in the league. But here's the thing about a team that can't make threes. Sometimes they do make threes, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you become in a you're getting a dangerous game. And against a team that doesn't or that allows a bunch of made threes, they're still playing competitive games when teams make all their threes. All of a sudden you miss a few, they make a few, and all of a sudden you're in a game that you don't really want to be in or didn't want any part of. And they play their ass off because they're used to playing with a basically a hand tied behind their back because they can't make threes.
Yep.
So that's kind of the risk, I would say, on the road for Michigan.
Michigan won there last year in a pretty close game. But, you know,
popped the bubble there.
But you can't talk about this game without, you know, going back to 2013. And it was, you know, a really, really good Michigan team that kind of had a long look in the mirror in a bad loss at Penn State. So that's pretty much what's to avoid here. Michigan is a better team in a number of ways. And the problem is that Penn State is this is not the game where you say, all right, you know, let's go out there, jump on them, and build up a lead and bury them, and then, you know, go get out of here with a solid double. You just don't do that to Penn State. They're going to be around in the game. It's going to get really uncomfortable, and you're going to have to make plays in the second half.
Yeah, it's very similar to Rutgers in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be anything easy. It's just going to be a grind, and then you have to pull away because you're the better team. I could also just see any day Penn State could just score like 47 points in 60 possessions and just not show up. But home game, maybe they got a bit of momentum. They got a win last week. I mean, we'll see. And they have dudes who can make life a bit miserable defensively, right? Reeves is probably one of the best defenders in the league. Wheeler is really good defensively. Watkins can pretend to protect the rim a bit. Their defense is not bad, and Michigan's offense has kind of been the weak point. Mm-hmm. And they're playing against a team that's fine to play a 55-57 game.
Yeah, you gotta bottle up Lamar Stevens, and you have to keep what the hell's the other guy's name? I'm blanking. Mike Watkins. Got to keep Mike Watkins off the glass and kind of try to limit his touches down there. So I think
John Watkins had a huge game in the first game.
He's a bad man. I mean, he's a guy who everyone has circled for a long time as a possible pro. He's 260 pounds and probably 6'9", 6'10", and athletic. So, and when he decides to play, he looks like a guy who you are just befuddled by. Like, why is this guy not an absolute stud? And then other times he kind of disappears. So who knows which version shows up, but he's gonna dominate the defensive glass, and they like to put him in situations to, you know, get a guy like John Teske in foul trouble or maybe change the game that way. And that, you know, that's the worst case scenario.
Yep. We don't have to talk anymore about this game. It's
fair.
We've gone enough. People get the point. They know what Penn State's all about. Penn State's been doing the same thing for a decade. It's time for a new chapter in State College.
All right. Nice win for Michigan State over the weekend, over Minnesota. Minnesota is just miserable to watch, and proved once again that it's kind of the you are who we think you are. Anytime Minnesota shows a glimmer of life, back they come to reality. And so
if you listen to our midweek pod, we told everyone bounce back spot.
That's right. So 79-55, Michigan State came in, just put the foot on the neck right out of the gate. Nick Ward gangbusters early on in this one. I made both games on Saturday, watched the full game in Ann Arbor, and then gunned it up to Lansing and had the game stream on. Don't worry, I wasn't watching, but I had the game
stream speeding ticket? Playing.
No speeding ticket. It got close, though. But heard my man Dan Dockett say, you know, Tom Izzo's motivational genius by benching Nick Ward, and then he came.
You were watching the game on TV, your phone while you were driving?
I had the audio playing. So the stream,
there's a radio in your car, right?
The stream was on. Yeah, I guess so. The stream was on. I just had the phone on the side. I wasn't watching the game. just listening. So yeah,
it's not safe.
yeah, I mean, I guess motivation worked for Nick Ward getting benched at Illinois. Didn't work so much for Aaron Henry. He's still looking to get back on track, but it was a nice bounce back game. It was a perfect matchup for Michigan State. Minnesota, for some reason, refused to double Ward as he was dominating the game, and they got pretty comfortable, cruised to a win. Matt McQuaid had a wonderful game, and on they go to Wisconsin for...
Do you look at a win over Minnesota as...
a quality win?
No, it's not. That's not that, but do you look at it as Michigan State figuring some things out or Minnesota just being sort of their perfect fix for that point in time?
I would lean toward the latter. It's probably matchup based. Playing Minnesota at home, was really a prime matchup. And like by the time I got there, Minnesota had completely stopped giving a shit in this game. Amir Coffey was just walking up and down the court. I'm pretty sure it started that way as well. I would not say, like, oh, okay, this is a great win. This means that they figured it all out, and now they're going to steamroll to a strong finish. They very well might steamroll to a strong finish. I wouldn't read that out of this game, though, and I wouldn't discount it if they lose at Wisconsin, because for as good of a matchup as that was this weekend, Wisconsin is the inverse, and it's a terrible matchup on the road. It'll be really, really difficult. So you can't make bold declarations from one win and one loss at this point in the season, except for Indiana, which definitely just pissed away its NCAA hopes with that horrific loss yesterday, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make any major statements. I was just saying, like, does it move the needle for you, or is it kind of just in place? And it could have moved the needle backwards more than it could move the needle forward.
Exactly. There was only bad things that could have happened in that game, and instead it was a really nice thing. I actually do think this isn't like narrative nonsense, but you know, these guys did have a chance to hang out with the 79 national championship team, and people will roll their eyes and say, you know, what the hell does that mean? But hey, man, I'm sorry. Magic Johnson talking to Cassius Winston and talking to Nick Ward and telling them, you know, what it means to play through hard times and how difficult it is to get through tough stretches. The 79 team lost 4 out of 6 at one point in that season and was 4-4 in Big Ten play at a time when only 40 teams made the NCAA tournament. And they figured their way out of it. And they came together as a team. And counted on each other and really learned a lot about themselves and went and won the freaking national championship. So I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but having voices other than Tom Izzo and Mike Garland and Stevens and Fife tell them, you know, what is what and what it actually means to make it through a season, I think there's real value in that. And we'll see how it plays out. But
better get Magic on a flight to Madison, huh?
I don't know if Magic is very interested in going to Madison on a Tuesday, but that would definitely be helpful. But we'll see. You get my point, though, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the game Tuesday in general is looking like a big day in the Big Ten race. We've got Michigan State, Wisconsin, but we also have Purdue, Maryland, right? Isn't that right?
Yep.
So that'll be
Maryland, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pivotal day in terms of our Maryland and Wisconsin in the race, or is it going to kind of shrink down a little bit, right?
Right.
Yeah, they need to win these games at home if they're going to be in the title race, I would say.
If Michigan and Michigan State come out of that night with wins, that's a huge pivot point in the season, no doubt.
Especially, like, this is a big test. Probably one of the toughest games on paper that Michigan State's played since Purdue, right? I mean, I know they lost those two, but this is a big test, and we only get this game once this year. So, what are your thoughts on Michigan State, Wisconsin?
I mean, it's such a hard game to handicap because it's like, okay, who's the thing that each team emphasizes? Who wins out on it because they are in direct conflict with each other. They're the exact opposite. And the big thing is going to be, is Cassius Winston locked in and playing like an All-American? Because he's going to have to direct this team in the half court, because they're not going to be able to get out and run all night long. They're going to have to be able to execute in the half court, and that starts with Winston not only setting guys up, but being able to break down Davison or whoever Wisconsin puts in front of him. He's got, like, this is one of those games he has to get into the paint and get his own scoring. He has to make any open three that he makes, because it's going to be tough to score at times. And not to say it's all on Winston, but a lot of it's on Winston. And, you know, what kind of game does Nick Ward give you against a matchup that I don't think he has fared particularly well in? Let me look up his past numbers against Wisconsin.
Here's a question for you, since we were talking about narratives earlier. Uh-oh. Do you buy into the "they ended our season" narrative? It's something you never think about when you're covering the team that's ending everyone's season. But when we were in Iowa,
yeah,
that was what all the Iowa guys were saying. Like, they ended our season last year in the Big Ten tournament. Michigan State beat Wisconsin back-to-back last year to end the season, right? They beat them the last – that was a really close game in Madison, and then they beat them again in a close game in New York City. Do you buy into that?
Well, I normally wouldn't, but you're right. I mean, at Iowa, I didn't even think of it. I didn't even remember the game, and that was like a huge game. It was overtime, and Michigan's Final Four run certainly does not happen if it loses that game in overtime. For a number of reasons, I can't say certainly doesn't happen, but it's unlikely to happen if it loses that game. Yeah, I mean, if it's something that's going to turn guys up and get them fired up, I guess. I just don't look at Wisconsin as that kind of team. It's more just like about their execution. If they're doing what they do, they win games. I don't think Wisconsin being pissed is a thing like that. But here are Ward's numbers against Wisconsin in three games last year. He had 8 points on 3-for-8 in that Big Ten win. He had 14 points on 5-for-8 in the season finale. I forgot they played each other back-to-back, Dan.
Yeah.
Too.
And if Wisconsin won those two games, they would have been
in the tournament, for sure.
Sure.
And then earlier in the year, in a home game in Lansing, he went for 12 on 6-for-9. He had 11 boards in that game, too. Because it's interesting. You would think Hap's length and kind of where he can get guys on defensive matchups could be a hindrance to Ward. We'll see.
How do you see – I wouldn't think Hap would guard Ward.
Rivers?
I think Rivers would guard – however you say it. I think he would guard – he really impresses me this year in terms of how good he is defensively. He can really protect the rim. He has great length. But he's really the real center.
Post
and Hap defender. Will guard the four, essentially. And they're more comfortable putting Hap on the perimeter. And I think that is something that kind of goes under the radar with this team. But Rivers has been really, really good defensively. And he gave Michigan a lot of problems, I would say. Mm-hmm. And that will be an interesting matchup. A couple other things I have written down. The three-point numbers and the assist numbers are really interested in this game. Michigan State obviously leads the country in assisted field goals, which has a lot to do with their transition, their style of offense. Wisconsin is really good at not allowing assisted field goals, right? You basically have to, like, dribble into a tough two. That's really what their defense is designed to do. Michigan State also gives up a lot of three-point attempts. Wisconsin doesn't always take a lot, but has really good three-point shooters. Those kind of look like the key stats for me in terms of how this game plays out on the road. And also, there's no team better in the country at taking away transition. I know you hit on that before, but it's going to be really hard to run against Wisconsin.
Yeah, like, what's your over-under number? Because this is the key to always beating Wisconsin, is getting, like, 10 unexpected baskets, if that makes sense. Whether it's, you know, stealing a couple in transition. Like, those are the things that can swing a game when it's going to be 68-64 or something like that. What's your over-under on points Michigan State needs in transition, like, for the, like, win-loss? Like, if it's, you know, if they go scoreless in transition, they're losing the game. I'll tell you that right now.
10.
Okay, that sounds right.
I was pulling up Michigan State's transition or fast break points per game. Now, fast break's a little tricky because
it's such a weird.
It's not always great. Yeah. But if you look at some of their losses, Purdue 10, Indiana 14, Illinois 8, Louisville 0. A lot of those games, and really when their offense kind of stagnates, there's a low number in that column. So I think that's for sure. And Wisconsin will hold you to 2 without even. It's just what they do. They don't crash the glass. And that could be a good thing for a Michigan State team that has not rebounded well defensively. It's an interesting matchup. And, I mean, Michigan State and Wisconsin have played a lot of big games. It's sort of like with Michigan. You know exactly how this game's going to go. We've seen it over and over and over again. They do the exact same things. It's the same game. It's going to be kind of a grinded out affair. The other thing I would point out is that I don't really think Wisconsin has the sort of length or athletes to really bother Cassius Winston. Mm-hmm. I think it's a game that he can be comfortable in for the most part. I don't think there's someone like Dosunmu who's going to really just get in his grill and make him have to make tough decisions. It's just going to come down to making tough shots, more or less.
The other thing is going to be, just looking back at these three games last year that they played, Wisconsin could not buy a three-pointer in any of those games. They went 5 for 24, 5 for 18, 6 for 17. Now, this is a team that didn't make the NCAA tournament and wasn't very good. But point being, limiting their kind of backbreaking shots on the road, you kind of saw it with the Michigan game there earlier this year. You know, Wisconsin got some threes, some unexpected threes from unexpected guys. Kobe King.
Aleem Ford.
You do need to limit those looks. And then, like I said, it's execution in the half court. Like, the turnovers that Michigan State can't roll in there and have 25% turnover rate on the road at Wisconsin, because that's an L all day. So, you have to execute in the half court. And yeah, you need a guy like I'm sorry, it's Cassius Winston is number one with a bullet in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that was Wisconsin couldn't make threes last year because it was just Hap doing something or Brad Davidson dribbling out the clock and throwing up a step back. That Wisconsin team was miserable at the end of last year, but they played hard. This year they have Trice back. I think that really helps them.
Uh-huh.
I don't really buy into the Khalil Iverson. I don't know what he gives them. They need to do else with that spot.
Gives him
big dunk. He also big blocked at the end of the game after a double pump fake on a beautiful behind the back pass from Ethan Happ. That would be frustrating if I was a Wisconsin fan, but neither here nor there. So what's your prediction for Tuesday night?
Man. It's pretty hard picking against Wisconsin at home. I would probably lean Wisconsin 67-64.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin by 4 or 5 points in the end.
Coming off a loss at home, it's a tough spot for Michigan State. Like, Michigan State can play really well and lose, too. Like, that's another thing that you can't discount. They can play a good game, like all the stuff I said, execute, do all that stuff, and still lose. Because Hap does things that a lot of guys in college basketball can't do, and then they make a couple threes, and you lose on virtue of losing a game. So there's nothing wrong with that. The interesting part for Michigan State will be, probably how it responds to it if it does take a loss.
How will Michigan State guard Hap? One-on-one? Double?
I think they'll double. I think they'll send help. It might not be a true double, but I think they'll send help. You can't let him get comfortable, because that's the thing. The second he's comfortable with someone on his back, it's just bad things happen. So I think they'll send help, try to force him to at least kick out and then get into defensive rotations, and do it that way. Because he can score over Ward. Ward's only 6'8", 6'9". Hap has that reach and all that lovely bag of low post trick moves that he has that he can score and he can draw fouls.
I still think
they don't have a natural matchup for him.
That
I think they'll
Iverson's on the floor, you double off Iverson. Totally. But other than that, I think that you really have to. His assist numbers will tell the story kind of Wisconsin's mm-hmm. offense. That's the difference in the two Michigan games, right? He had one assist yesterday or Saturday, and what did he have in the first Michigan game? 7 assists, right? That's the difference in the game. If he gets 7 assists, because he's going to get 20 points regardless. So I think that kind of tells the story based on how he's covered. It'll be interesting because Michigan State, obviously, best 2-point defense in the country. Perhaps trying to score 2, so it'll be – I don't know how that really plays out.
And the other thing is, Kenny Gowen's health is kind of – I think they'll give an update today at Tom Izzo's noon press conference, but probably need a healthy Kenny Gowen.
That would be
giving you minutes
a big loss.
That'd be a brutal loss.
Who would play those minutes?
I think
like
you
go – Tillman and Ward can get to so many.
Yeah, I think you'd have to slide Henry down and try to steal some minutes with him at the 4. I'm trying to think of what they did more of in the second half against Minnesota. It really wasn't a game. So I think like Marcus Bingham played 6 second half minutes. Gabe Brown played 5 second half minutes. I think you have to steal time with Aaron Henry at the 4 if Goins is out.
Because Kenny's basically the perfect
like you can't play Gabe
person
Brown
to have
game.
Against Wisconsin.
I guess yeah, exactly.
Kithier would play, right?
Kithier would get minutes. You're right.
He played 18 right. minutes at against Minnesota
and played really well. Played really well. I'm sorry, I just blanked on that.
That's tough though.
But again, we saw what Hap did to freshman John Teske, right? I can certainly see Ethan Hap doing that to Thomas Kithier, and that's no offense to Thomas Kithier, but he can make guys look very young and very foolish, yeah.
And just that off, just playing against that system is tough.
Yes.
Defensively, especially. Would be a big...
That would be huge, yeah.
A big injury, for sure, to watch. Anything else on Michigan State in our...
I think we're good, and we're over 45 minutes in.
Better get into our...
Get the rankings
our Big
going
10 action.
Before the people tune out. Oh, wait, I lost my ranking page. Hold on a second. Oh, wait, I know who I picked first, though. So I had first picked this week in our Big Ten Power Rankings. I took Michigan. It is currently in first place in the league and playing, I think, a little bit better than it was during that slide. Offense, I think, is maybe figuring things out a little bit more. Defense is still there. And the win over Wisconsin is one of the better wins in the league. This year, even though it was at home, so I got them at number 1.
That's fair. I have Purdue number 2. Purdue just keeps on winning. We had them 1 last week. They didn't really do anything to deserve to drop, but they have now won 8 games in a row. Not really much you can say other than their offense is rocking and rolling, their defense is getting better, and they're a legit team that can win the league because of their schedule. And that kind of Tuesday will be interesting. Like Tuesday's the hurdle that could kind of, if they can win at Maryland, I mean, it's hard to see them losing more than what, 4 games.
Yeah. I have a take.
Uh-oh.
Is Purdue good?
I think Matt Painter is one of the best coaches in the Big Ten.
No doubt.
I think that Purdue's not quite as good as they might seem.
Right.
I don't know that I'd pick them to go deep in the NCAA tournament. I don't trust them, but they're well coached. They've played a hell of a schedule, and now they're winning. They're kind of like – they remind me of some like Michigan teams where all of a sudden they figured out and they're just rocking and rolling and beating – like I don't know what – I don't look at their team and I'm like, oh, Ryan Klein is the best number 2 option in the country. Carson Edwards isn't efficient, but they just keep winning.
Every time I watch him, I'm just like sitting there kind of scratching my head as to how this is all happening. Carson Edwards still takes heaps of bad shots. There was a lot of time in that Nebraska game where they did not look that good and still won by 19. you know, they get taken to overtime at Penn State. They let Penn State score 90 points. I don't know who does that. I don't know.
They're an old-school Michigan team. Let me shoot a bunch of threes, score a bunch of points.
I think for the conversation of, you know, Purdue and the easiest path, and Purdue is almost going to waltz itself into at least a share of the league title or something like that. More and more I am stepping away from that. I think I've seen things happen, and there is a month left in this year, and I think this team has a skid coming in it somewhere. It feels like everything has gone their way.
I'm going to read you the remaining schedule, but only by reading the coaches' names. Turgeon, Chambers, Miller, Miles, Underwood, Holtman, Patino, Collins.
I'm just saying. I think this team has a little skid coming in it. I think they lose two games that people don't see coming.
Yeah, but I'm saying if they win at Maryland and they lose two games people don't see coming, they still finish 16-4.
Or they lose at Maryland and then they lose two games that no one sees coming.
And they still probably share the league.
15-5. We'll see. I think 16 might still be in play.
So that would basically mean, I guess, there's a sweep in the Michigan State series, right?
Potentially. I don't know. I just don't think it's out of the question that someone gets to 16.
Okay.
And Michigan could split with Michigan State and lose to whatever at Maryland and still finish 16-4.
That's fair.
So
that's fair. Who do you have number three?
Okay. You know now Purdue's going to win out, and I'm going to look like an asshole, but that's fine. Number three is Michigan State for all the obvious reasons. Still very much in this thing, and we'll see. I think I'm really interested in tomorrow night's game, but like I said, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think you burn the walls down over a loss, but I'm just really curious to see how they play.
Yeah, and you're going to have to play like Wisconsin if you're going to win at Wisconsin. Yeah. That's the thing about playing them. And then I have Wisconsin next. Tough loss on the road, but they're still in a good spot, I would say. They are projected as a KenPom winner in the rest of their games. The toughest ones are Michigan State at home, at Indiana, and at Ohio State. And I think they'll be competitive in all those games. At the very least, they're in a pretty good spot, I would say.
Make a case that
second best defense in the Big Ten, too.
You make a case that Wisconsin has an easier schedule than Purdue going out the door from here on out.
But they have four losses already.
I understand. I'm just saying that there's the blanket statement that Purdue has the easiest schedule left.
Well, hold on. Who does have the easiest schedule left? I'm going to look on BartTorvik.com over here, and I'm going to tell you the easiest remaining schedule is Iowa.
Well, curveball.
Iowa, Illinois, Purdue, Wisconsin have the easiest schedules remaining.
So that ranks Purdue ahead of Wisconsin in easiness.
Yes, slightly. Okay. And you have to remember that the better you are, you're always going to have a little bit, because you can't play yourself. Right. So Michigan has played the easiest schedule to this point, has the toughest schedule remaining. You're into that kind of thing.
Sounds about right. Okay. I picked number five, right?
Yep.
And I took Maryland. Maryland is still kind of just sitting there very much in NCAA tournament picture and hanging on to you know, any possibility in the Big Ten. They're 9-4 in the league, 18-6 overall.
Are you buying or selling on Maryland? Like, if you have Maryland stock right now.
they have Purdue at home this week and then travel to Michigan and then go to Iowa and then and still have a later date with Michigan. I am selling on Maryland. I have been selling on Maryland all year.
Bruno Fernando, I appreciate the dunk over the flop with the stomp. It was an impressive play. I put it on my Big Ten highlights of the year. I'll give them credit for that. We didn't get to talk about that in the midweek pod.
Fair.
They're tough inside. I'm not selling on Maryland. Like, I think they're a decent team. I don't think they're a contender. I'll give you that. Next, I have Iowa. Iowa had quite a roller coaster of a game last night.
That, did you watch it?
I watched the last 5 or 6 minutes, and, well, that was quite something, and it just seems to be what happens every game to Northwestern. Yikes, but terrible collapse by Northwestern, but all of a sudden Iowa looks like a team that is in play to maybe get a double bye in the Big Ten tournament.
Yep.
The announcers were talking about them getting a protected seed and ended up in Des Moines. I think they might need to slow down a little bit with that, but either way, this team is – I was all ready to make jokes about the typical Fran collapse.
Totally.
Instead, it was the Chris Collins collapse. It's the 2019 version, huh?
We're going to get into Chris Collins later. But oof.
This team looks legit, and I don't trust their offense. They just give up a bunch of open shots and hope for the best on defense. Sorry, I don't trust their defense.
Mm-hmm.
But their offense, I mean, Bohannon can just launch from anywhere, as we saw, and – the second to last shot that he made was, I think, more impressive than the buzzer beater to win. Yeah, it was like a crazy, like, one arm, like, deep pull up three. I mean, the dude just pulls from anywhere. He's got the most automatic, or, like, I would say the deepest range in the Big Ten. And, I mean, their games are always fun to watch. I'll give them credit.
Yes, that is certainly the case. And there's still even moments. There was another coast to coast Tyler Cook move in this game where you're just like, I mean, what is going on here? Like, how can they still do some things like that? But they won without Luka Garza doing that much, I believe. I haven't looked at the box, but just from watching the game, it seemed like he really wasn't there for... Yeah, he went scoreless. There you go. In 17 minutes. Got an early foul trouble. So, you know, they're a fascinating team to watch, and that... All right, my funniest takeaway from that game was, did you watch Fran post-game?
So I saw clips. Some part of it.
Saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, when we're down 14 with 4 minutes, we were in the double bonus. So, you know, we were going to get free points at the line, and we were going to be able to get extra possessions. I'm like, Fran, get out of here.
I did give him credit.
Trying to say that you coached them into that comeback. That was Bohannon making ridiculous shots and... Northwestern completely crapping its pants, and you won a game that you shouldn't have. Congratulations. Just take it and go.
He also was like, yeah, we knew the full court press was working earlier in the game, yeah, so we knew we had that up our sleeve. Well, geez, why weren't you doing it the whole game, man? You're getting killed.
Maybe don't fall behind Northwestern by 14 before you pull out your bag of tricks.
Oh, yikes.
Awesome. All right, am I up?
You're up.
By the way, Iowa is 26th in the latest net rating.
25th in KenPom.
Regarding this claim of potential double or a protected spot. Okay, number 7, I took Ohio State.
We got to talk about this one.
Which continues to just be kind of a middling group. Oh, God, I know. I was watching that game in agony. So yesterday, or last week, Dylan and I made a little wager about which team would finish stronger and get a bid out of the Big Ten, Ohio State or Indiana. And then on cue, those two got into the ring together and went at it. And Indiana is trash.
So did you bet on the team that's won 4 of their last 5 games or lost 9 of their last 10?
I was feeling really good. I was feeling really good after seeing the magic that they pulled at Breslin. But... here we are. So, Ohio State, to their credit, goes and wins at Assembly Hall in what I called a crap heap of a game, and it was, but the ending was unbelievable, and they stole one. That's a good win. That's an NCAA tournament resume win.
Classic 500 league bubble, yes, team.
Totally.
Oh, not good at, like, they're just average, little over a point per possession, offense, defense. There's nothing that stands out about them, but well-coached, and they grind out wins. I mean, that's really Ohio State in a nutshell.
Chris Holtman.
Classic 9-10 seed.
Chris Holtman put your boy in the blender in that one. That little pick and slip to Wesson at the end was That was pretty sweet for the game-winning dunk. And then what happens in Indiana comes down, and let's draw up a last-minute play. Oh, wait, you can't, because regardless of what's drawn up, Romeo Langford is taking a step-back three-pointer with everything on the line for no good reason. This is a guy who is a 26% three-point shooter who needs his step-back for the game-winning highlight. That is terrible. They need to not. He is not allowed to touch the ball in the game-winning possession anymore.
Yikes! I got nothing else to add there. We're talking about number 8 out of Illinois, and
sneaky. Be wary of the Illini.
We said to watch out for Illinois a couple weeks ago. I'm in on Brad Underwood, even though I hate his defense. It still doesn't really work. But they've won 4 out of 5. They have some good wins in there. Michigan State at home, Maryland on a neutral. I mean, they string a few more games. You don't want to play them. I think we've said this in the Big Ten tournament. You don't really want to play them at all.
No.
And they're. I'm really curious to see, I guess.
Georgie.
Where this goes. Yeah, Georgie had, 26 or something like that?
No, more than that. Oh, 27.
35.
That's it. That's what I was
Yeah,
thinking.
35. And. I mean, that dude's awesome. I like him ever since I saw his interview on the Big Ten Network talking about biking around in the snow. So I'm in all the way on Georgie. But
14 for 18 on twos in that game. Just in Burkhart parlance, a certified bucket getter.
Although Rutgers scored 94 points, which says everything about Illinois. Because
sure.
Rutgers hasn't scored 94 points in a Big Ten game, probably ever.
But how many teams are scoring 99 on Rutgers?
No, that's true. That's
the
just
the flying just, Illini and Georgie Baskervillelei.
Just pedal to the metal, basketball on fucking speed, and that's just Illinois basketball. And it's kind of fun to watch. If AO comes back next year, that'll be a really interesting team. I don't know that that's happening, though.
Well, let's look at the week ahead real quick for Illinois, because this is one of the more interesting teams in the league. They got
at Ohio State
at Wisconsin. Okay, might be a rough week for the Illini, but I'm gonna say they go 1-1.
All right.
All right. And now my pick at number 9. I'm gonna take begrudgingly go with those Minnesota Gophers. I was really hoping that it was gonna fall that you had to take them so that you had to talk about them, but now a 3-game losing streak. Really, no shame in the 3-game losing streak at Purdue. Home against Wisconsin at Michigan State. That's as tough a stretch as pretty much anyone will face this year in the league. But the thing that really just bothered me was just why, like, their body English, their disposition, everything. Like, it just looked like a team that was not there to win a game. It looked like they were there just to get in and get out. And I don't like anything about the way they carry themselves. They don't kind of have the air of a team that you trust.
-6 points per 100 possession efficiency margin. It's really bad for a team with a close to .500 record. Projected by KenPom to lose in 6 of their final 7 games.
Which would be big for 2 reasons. One, the Big Ten needs another NCAA tournament team. And 2, if they dive here at the end, I would probably drop at least 1 quad, right?
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the league.
Their computer numbers are already bad.
I know. They're 58 in the net, so they're already like a borderline. You know,
they're a 1-2. They're a 2 at home. They're a 1 on the road right now.
Well, what if they're not a 1 on the road?
Then they would be a 2-3.
They can and that is. I think they're very much in play to slip. So, you know, they need to figure out a way to finish .500. It's basically the goal there, right? And it's not impossible. They go to Nebraska, they have a home game against Indiana, they go to Rutgers, they go to Northwestern. Like, yeah, they've got some losses with Michigan, Purdue, Maryland, but like they should be able to finish 4-3. If they don't finish 4-3, time for a change. I'm calling it.
Oof. Oof. Number 10, I have Indiana, but I've got some good news here. We sold all the real estate on Archie Island on Sunday, February 3rd. Everything cleared out after that win in East Lansing. and we got out with a minor loss, and we're okay with it. That thing is just bad home loss. When was the last time Indiana lost four games in a row at home?
I don't know. That's something for Zach Osterman, Dustin Dopriak, and the boys to go digging for, because not out of the realm of possibility here.
Broken team. What's next? I don't want to talk about Indiana anymore.
am I up?
Yep.
Rutgers at number 11. A team we talked a decent amount about Rutgers earlier in the pod. It's still a team nobody wants to play. What is your project? All right, so the big question here. They're 4-9 in the league right now. What is your projected record for the Scarlet Knights? Because it would be pretty impressive if they could if they could finish 10th or better, which I don't think is going to happen, but
so yeah, the question I guess is, can they get out of the Wednesday games in Chicago?
Right. Like, they're not going to finish last. That conversation's pretty much over. But, how well can they do?
I think they have two more wins on their schedule.
Okay.
Minnesota and Penn State. And I don't know that six gets you out of the... But who knows? I mean, it's basically, is Rutgers or Indiana playing on Wednesday? Right? That's how I would put it right now.
Mm-mm-mm. I would say... they're projected to lose 5 more games. I'll say they steal one of them. They're going to mess somebody up. Like, one of these teams that's still kind of maybe flirting with the bubble. Like, Minnesota.
Yeah, they're going to be Minnesota.
Minnesota goes to Piscataway. Let's chalk that up for an L for Richard. You can read the tea leaves on that one. All right. Number 12 is you. Go for it.
I have Penn State. They're 1-11, but they won a game this week, and no one else down here won a game, as far as I know. Could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think they're better than their record. It's just been a brutal, like we said, they've played so many close games and just lost them over and over again. I don't know. That gets you the consolation spot of number 12 in our power rankings.
Yeah. It was good seeing Pat Chambers get a win. Did you see the hug with Colin?
I did see the hug.
Buried his head in his shoulder. It was the weight of the world coming off of his shoulders, but I'm sure he still feels it, because I think everyone knows what might be coming at the end of the regular season, unfortunately for Patrick. So 13, I take Nebraska, which I don't know. The only question is, how far will this nosedive go? Their next three are, they have two home games against Minnesota and Northwestern, and then they go to Penn State. I have to imagine they can win one of these games, right, to avoid.
Yeah, a feel-good. There's going to be a feel-good. We played our ass off and beat a very average team here, I think, coming up this week. And then they're just going to get bludgeoned down the stretch with Purdue, Michigan, Michigan State, and Iowa.
Yeah, I think that – did I put the take out there once that they were going to win one of those three games?
Probably. Before the year, I said they were going to win the Big Ten tournament. I liked them. I mean, Copeland injury.
I think recently I said that they were going to ruin someone's stats or standing in the Big Ten and win one of those games, but I'm not feeling good about
they're,
that.
They're just a broken team. They scored a point per possession against Purdue, though. I'll give them credit.
Okay. Good for them.
And last place, we have Northwestern after just an embarrassing collapse.
What a horrible week. What a horrible week.
Just a mess. And here's the thing. I know you said you're giving Chris Collins till about 2025, but we just said all these other coaches right above him in our power rankings are on the way out. I don't know what this is happening here, and it's not a good situation in Evanston, I would say. New stadium or not, new arena or not.
So gave up Penn State's first win of the year and then blew a 14-point lead. That's a pretty hard thing to do in 1 week of college basketball. But I stand by what I said. I think there's zero chance that Chris
Collins
is in the conversation out there.
There is no forward momentum there at all.
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad. Well, this week, they get Rutgers at home, which in theory is maybe a little spot to bounce back on. I don't.
Scarlet Knights might have their own revenge tour.
I would not put it past them. It might be a week like that for Northwestern might lead to quitting time for the boys. So, all right, that'll do it, right?
That'll do it. We quit when we get to talk about Northwestern.
Really breaking down Northwestern. Hour and 10 minutes in. Solid, tight pod this week. All right. Well, be sure to rate and review this podcast and subscribe if you haven't on any number of... Hey, give the web address that leads to the site where you can subscribe on the 400 different platforms.
It's movingscreenpod.com.
Movingscreenpod.com. There's the links there where any... So what's it? There's Spreakers. There's Spotify.
iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Google Play, whatever you need.
AM, FM, we're everywhere. So
we're not, though, but it's a good try.
So subscribe on whatever platform you fancy. Leave a rating in the iTunes store if you would be so kind. And read umhoops.com, read theathletic.com, and be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers. Thanks for listening.